It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. We're going to hear next from one of the most frequently quoted people you rarely hear. Antonin Scalia is among the most outspoken members of the Supreme Court. Because he's a judge, he rarely takes questions on the record from reporters, but he did speak with us. Here's NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg.
Antonin Scalia is a man of many contradictions. An only child, he's the father of 9 children. Tough-minded and thick-skinned in public, in private, he suffers when attacked. Often confrontational on the bench and sarcastic, even acidic in dissent, in private, he's charming and funny. Scalia has made his biggest mark so far in those biting dissents. His pen is an unsparing skewer. He's mocked Chief Justice John Roberts, a fellow conservative, accusing him of, quote, faux judicial restraint. He said Justice Sandra Day O'Connor's view on abortion, quote, cannot be taken seriously. And just this month, he derided Justice John Paul Stevens' views on the death penalty, calling them, quote, the purest form of rule by judicial fiat, even though Stevens agreed with Scalia on the end result. So I asked Justice Scalia if using that kind of language in written opinions is wise, whether in fact it might not alienate potential allies on the court.
When it is wrong, it should be destroyed.
Destroyed?
I think all of the reasons it is wrong should be pointed out and pointed out forcefully. And I don't mind people doing that to my opinions. A good, hard-hitting dissent keeps you honest.
Scalia is famous as a so-called originalist and textualist. Or as he puts it, my Constitution is not living, it is dead. It means what the framers intended back at the founding of the Republic. So if capital punishment was constitutional in 1791, it still is today.
Whatever they understood then is, in my view, the meaning. And it's not up to me to say, well, it really shouldn't mean that anymore. It should mean something different. Once you get into that boat, you have no criterion. It's up to the individual preferences of 9 justices. And that's just not the way it ought to work.
So if you put people in stocks in the public square, which was a common practice then?
I would say that may be very stupid. But it's not unconstitutional if indeed it was a punishment that was at that time accepted. Now, you know, the more ridiculous you make the example, the less likely it is to occur. They used to notch ears, too.
Contrary to public perceptions, Scalia and fellow conservative Clarence Thomas do not march in lockstep. Thomas is far less willing to abide by the court's past decisions, while Scalia says he does not believe in undoing most of what's become law until now.
I am a textualist. I am an originalist. I am not a nut.
His mantra is that states are free to do what they want about most of the controversial questions of the day. They can legalize abortion or not, legalize homosexual conduct or not, legalize assisted suicide or not. But when Oregon did, in fact, legalize assisted suicide, Scalia dissented on other grounds. He's accused his fellow justices of taking sides in the culture wars. His critics say that it is he who's taken sides by the tone of his dissents. For example, in the case where the court struck down a state law that made private homosexual conduct a crime.
I don't know why that's taking sides. The next step is for the court to say that same-sex marriage must be permitted. It's hard to distinguish the one from the other.
Hasn't happened in this court, though, has it?
Well, it happened in Canada, didn't it? It is a living constitutional principle, and Canada's a living constitution court.
Scalia is no stranger to criticism from all quarters. When he provided the 5th vote striking down a law making it a crime to burn the American flag, his own wife, Maureen, greeted him in the morning singing, "It's a grand old flag."
I got a lot of heat from that opinion, really. Serious, biting criticism from the quarter that I usually don't get criticism from. That is to say, from the right rather than the left. And I just want to give credit to a wonderful gentleman who was President Bush 1. He wrote a handwritten note, not to me. I think he would have thought that was improper. But he wrote it to Maureen, saying, and I see your husband's been getting a lot of criticism for his flag-burning decision. You tell him not to worry about it. He did the right thing. Isn't that a nice thing for the president to do? I mean, gee, he had a lot of other things to worry about. I'm eternally grateful for that. It was such a nice gesture.
With the addition of two new Bush appointees on the Supreme Court, Scalia's views are now on the verge of prevailing in most cases for the first time in his tenure.
In the big cases, I'm maybe not as much of a big loser as I used to be, if you want to keep score. But, you know, winning, losing, isn't it? That's never been my objective. And it's my hope that in the fullness of time, the majority of the court will come to see things, at least for the future.
He is so beloved by the political right that some conservatives dream of him as a vice presidential candidate with John McCain. Scalia reacts with a huge guffaw.
For one thing, Senator McCain's one of the accomplishments he was proudest of was McCain-Feingold campaign financing reform. And I thought the whole thing was unconstitutional. The court approved it, but not with my blessing. So, you know, when someone, what should I say, disparages what you think is your life's principal achievement, you're not likely to want him to be on your presidential ticket. Besides which, ask my wife. I'd be a lousy politician. I'd say what I thought.
And
that's not what politicians should do.
In recent years, Scalia has abandoned his one-time reticence about talking in public. He, like other justices before him, is giving a few select interviews to promote his book. And yet he and other justices forbid cameras in the Supreme Court. Some question why the justices should be able to turn the spigot on and off at will.
You're darn right we can.
Why?
Why? It's my voice, it's my face. I don't have to show it, except where I want to. Why is that so extraordinary?
Unlike some, Scalia does not speak only to friendly audiences. He's appeared in debates with fellow justices and with the head of the ACLU at an ACLU national meeting. He concedes that's a big change from the days when he followed the maxim that judges should not be seen or heard.
But the reality is that in modern times, in what my father used to call the space age, where there's all this dead space to be filled on radio and television and in the press, I'm going to be a public spectacle whether I like it or not. It's mostly whether the public is going to get a picture of me that's secondhand or rather at least have some opportunities to hear firsthand what I have to say and assess firsthand what I'm like.
Justice Antonin Scalia, his new book, written with lexicologist Brian Garner, is Making Your Case, The Art of Persuading Judges. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
And you can hear more from Justice Scalia's interview later today on All Things Considered. One more note on the Supreme Court. Today, the High Court upheld a state law that requires photo identification at the polls. In a 6-3 ruling, the court backed an Indiana law that its supporters said was aimed at deterring voter fraud. Opponents of the law said it was meant to discourage poor, elderly, and minority voters.